Welcome. How many have heard that human life is a precious opportunity? And what is there that makes human life a precious opportunity? It's really very simple, it's very straightforward, and it's very plain spoken. The two things that make life a precious opportunity are the opportunity to benefit self and the opportunity to benefit others. Now that's very simple, isn't it? And so, you know, when we look at that and we look at the fact that we have this precious human opportunity, then we need to know how to go about benefiting ourselves and benefiting others. And because this benefit, this self-benefit and benefit of others is already present, in other words, it's already present within us. It isn't something we get from somewhere else. If we got it from somewhere else, where would it come from once we had it? As everything is a single non-dual expanse, where would it come from once we came upon it? So that means it's already within us. It's already within us, the way to benefit ourselves and the way to be of benefit to others. And that getting in touch with that, tapping into that, it's very straightforward and it's very simple and it's very accessible. It's not a complicated matter. It's not something that we need to strive for decades in order to achieve. Doesn't that make sense? What is already present isn't something that we'd need to strive to achieve. It's just like we wouldn't need to strive to achieve the color of our eyes. The color of our eyes, it's already present. It's already naturally here. We wouldn't work for years to try to get the color of our eyes. So what we'd have to do is just relax and look at our eyes and see that they already have their color. So this is very similar to recognizing our innate nature, our pristine, tranquil ground of being that is already present. And what I suggested about the eyes, just to relax and look at the color of the eyes, is how we come to know ourselves as we are, just to rest repeatedly in the essence of our being, the total ease of our being, the relaxed nature of our being that is at the root of every single perception. And as we do so repeatedly for short moments many times, it becomes automatic. So I've just described one way we can go about this. Short moments repeated many times become automatic. Now there is another way, and that is to do nothing. Just expose yourself to the teachings, the Great Freedom teachings, and conviction will dawn. Or you can use a combination of the two. So whatever the approach is that works for you, that's great. And what is this really about? What does all this mean? Ease of being, self-benefit, benefit of the whole. What it means is that within us is already present love, wisdom, and energy. That's what our natural state is. And that love, wisdom, and energy is synonymous with our own awareness. Awareness is that by which we know everything. There isn't anything at all that is known that is known by anything other than awareness. And this awareness that is within us is also the awareness of everything. So we're not separate from everything that is. The vast expanse of awareness is infinite, timeless, and not located anywhere. Forever stainless awareness has never gotten stuck anywhere, like in a human being. It's not stuck there, and it's not stuck anywhere else either. So when we rest as awareness, no matter what appears, then we get more and more in touch with the nature of our being. And even this may, though this may sound way too easy, perhaps compared to some of the approaches you've been taking, just know that this practice of imperturbable rest, repeated many times until it becomes automatic, is a practice that human beings for at least 17,000 years have been practicing. And it is one that is guaranteed to, first of all, lead to confidence in the practice, because when we rest as awareness, when something appears, and rather than describing that appearance or seeking something in that appearance, we just allow the rest that is the essence of that appearance, the rest of awareness that is the essence of that appearance, to be as it is, without any need to make the appearance into anything, then we immediately see the benefits of that. So it's very easy to develop confidence in the practice because we immediately see the benefits of the practice. It doesn't take a long time to see the benefits. Now I'll give an example of that. Say that our thing is anger. And that's one of our points of view, one of the appearances that comes up for us. And it's been coming up all our life. And when we get angry, we either fight or we flee. And we either blow up and let someone else have it, or we internalize it on ourselves. We hold it within. And this is just what we've done with anger always. Well, when anger comes up, there are only four things we can do with it. And this is true with all appearances. One, we can indulge the appearance, whatever it is. Two, we can avoid it. Three, we can replace it with another appearance. So saying, oh, anger is not a good appearance, so I'm going to replace it with happiness instead. And the fourth is to remain as flawless awareness, to rest as awareness, seeing all as awareness until all is awareness. And in this way, we are easily and effortlessly able to realize that everything truly is a single non-dual expanse, which is the meaning of the word non-duality. If there's anything that we're saying is impure within the pure expanse, then you see we're taking a detour. If everything is already pure, there's never been anything that is impure. And there's never been anything that's needed to be done in order to make what is already pure, pure. Do you see what I'm saying? So no matter what the appearance is, and no matter what it's been labeled to be, all appearances, whatever they are primordially pure. They've never been anything else. And the whole idea we have about good and bad and needing to decide whether things are good and bad in order to establish moral and ethical order within ourselves as individuals and within ourselves as a species, this is just a belief system. It's simply a belief system about what we take ourselves to be. And it's a belief system that's very, very limited. First of all, it says that we exist as something in and of ourselves that has a personal identity. And it says that everything else exists too, and that it has an independent nature. So this states that we have an independent nature and that everything else has an independent nature. That's the belief system. And that these things that exist, whether it's someone or something, that they exist in and of themselves, and they exist within some overall belief systems of time and space and cause and effect. So most of us live our entire lives believing in those belief systems, and we feel ourselves limited by them, and we take ourselves to be that. So when it comes to looking at the true nature of our being, very often when we seek a way to do that, we seek a method or approach that is also defined and structured according to time and space and cause and effect and effort and achievement. That's just a natural way for us to go. Most of us, from the moment we've been born, we've been told in one way or another that there's something wrong with us and we need to be fixed. But we as human beings are naturally flawed. Now, all of these belief systems occur within time and space, cause and effect. They say that the reason human beings are the way they are and the reason we can't behave is because we're flawed, that we're born flawed, and from the moment we're born we need to be fixed. So most of us have heard this from the time we're born. When we do something that isn't right, we're told that that isn't right, and then if pretty soon it's the thinking, well, some of the thoughts are good thoughts and other of the thoughts are bad thoughts, and then the emotions, some of the emotions are good emotions and some of the emotions are bad emotions. Well, if people are living only within time and space and cause and effect, within those belief systems, then some of those things may need to apply. But what I'm saying here is that no one has ever been limited by those. No one has ever been limited by time and space and cause and effect. And this is simply the way it is. And everything, no matter what it is a perfect expression of love, wisdom, and energy. And the only possible way to realize that is to do nothing. Because it's already present. The moment the doing starts, the more appearances are added in, as though appearances added to other appearances can lead to what already is. So what is guaranteed is that if you rest imperturbably, that means without ever giving up, imperturbably, never be perturbed by anything. No appearance, no matter what it is, poses a threat. No appearance whatsoever is an obstacle. Rest repeatedly for short moments many times until it becomes automatic. That is absolutely all that is required. And like I said, if you don't want to do that, if you just keep listening to this message, conviction will dawn within you because you already know this about yourself. You know, isn't this what we've all been looking for from the moment we're born? We all know that love, wisdom, and energy is what is, and we all know that we already are this, and we're always looking for it everywhere. How can we make this happen? How can we make this come about? It's what we want more than anything else, because it's who we are, and we already know this. So, you know, it's really important for us as individuals, particularly at this point in human history, to take up this very easy way of being and to really hold ourselves to account for it, to hold ourselves to account for who we are as individuals and who we are as a species. And if we do so, then we can evolve beyond the primitive way of thinking about things as bound by time and space, cause and effect. It's already so. You see, we're not really evolving into something new. We're just opening up more into our true nature. The true nature of mind, awareness, that by which we know everything, is already super complete in itself. And its super completeness is an expression of superb helpfulness. So, you know, when we rest as awareness for short moments repeated many times, this becomes more obvious to us. Immediately we see that this benefit is naturally present. It's naturally present. It's our nature. It's never been anywhere else. And then gradually, for most of us, we gain familiarity with that. And we come to see within ourselves that really none of the thoughts we have, none of the emotions, and none of the experiences whatsoever, no matter what they may be, pose an obstacle to the complete ease of our being, to the complete love of our being, to the complete wisdom of our being, into the complete energy of our being. And when we see this so markedly and undeniably in ourselves, then we know it's true for everyone. You see, there's no one left out. There are no special beings. There are no special beings. Everyone is included in the single non-dual expanse. If the single non-dual expanse truly is a single non-dual expanse, where would there be special people? Where would they be? You know, the forever stainless, flawless awareness has never gotten stuck in special people or in anyone. So, you know, we really need to give this to ourselves. It's so very important. It's so very, very, very important. The other day, I in the meeting in the morning like this, which we call satsang here, and other places we call it meetings because people don't know the word satsang. But I told that I had been talking to a Swami, and he's lived here many decades, and he was lamenting about the changes in the area, how there are more and more hotels and fewer ashrams, and how at one time this was an incredible place where the only people here were sages and seekers. And he said, oh, you know, this was just such a wonderful time. It was so great. And now everything's changing. The ashrams are being placed by hotels and partygoers. And he said, here we have the Holy Ganga. Isn't this a special place? And he said, don't you agree that it's a special place? And I just said, well, you know, everywhere is special. That's the way it is for me. Everywhere is special, no matter what it is. And and I said to him, you know, everything is governed by the law of impermanence. No matter what it is, will change. No matter what appearance is, it will change, and it will resolve in the basic space of awareness. And what hasn't appeared, it will appear. So, you know, just as things are always changing, so too this whole scene of the way sages and spiritual seekers get together, that's also changing right now. And today's holy river is the internet. That's where sages and seekers are gathering now. They're gathering on the internet. So for a very long time, these very direct teachings, like the one that the Great Freedom Teaching gives, have been very difficult to receive. They're held by only a few people, and then you have to know where those people are and go there and try to get it, and you may have to prove yourself in order to get it first, or whatever it might be. But you see, things aren't like that anymore. Today we live in an era where information is increasingly free, including this kind of information. So for the first time in human history, these very direct teachings are open to everyone and spoken in a language that isn't culturally based. So all the terms in the teaching can be understood by everyone in the world. This is just part of the law of impermanence and the way things are always changing. At one time, we as a global human culture appeared to be fragmented because we couldn't travel easily and we couldn't really communicate with each other easily, and we lived in specific geographical areas. So sages and seekers were just in a little geographical area, and they kind of knew each other. Once in a while, someone would travel a few hundred miles to see somebody. But, you know, that isn't the way it is anymore. Everything is wide open. It's completely wide open. And that's the way it is with these very direct teachings, too, which throughout all of time have been called the pinnacle teachings, the epitome teachings. They are complete teachings with unerring instruction on how to completely realize what we call in the Great Freedom Teaching the wisdom body of potent benefit. There's no need to call it anything other than that. We don't need to spiritualize it, religionize it, philosophize it, psychologize it, or anything else. It's about being human. That's what it's about. It's not about anything else, and it's not owned by anyone. So that's what I have to say. Everywhere I go. Now, here is another matter. I've been involved with the internet for 35 years, so since I was a very young woman, before most people knew about the internet, and been very involved in pioneering uses of the internet in many settings, both in public institutions and in for-profit institutions. And since the very beginning of the internet, there have always been those involved in its development who believe very radically that information is free. And these people are the reason that we can use the internet today. The internet started out owned by the Defense Department of the United States. And all the information was housed in mainframe computers. And then the government started forming relationships with big corporations like Lockheed in some selected university settings. But still, this information was very restricted, and it was still owned by the Defense Department, and they had complete control over it. But as more people in the corporations, and especially in academia, began to use the information on the internet, they said, wow, and this is what happened for me. The first time I used an online database to do a bibliographic search rather than looking it up in a bunch of books in the library, I was just awed. It was amazing to me. Of course, it took a whole day to get the results back. So always, including now, there's an underground of people who believe that information is entirely free. And for all these years, the last 35 years, they have been working diligently to make sure that all information is free. And when we first started using the internet very publicly in the 90s, what happened was that people tried to place a proprietary interest or ownership interest over what happens on the internet and the means of production, like different software documents. So Microsoft started and all these other big companies. But what do we see now? We see more of an integration of the internet, and it's gradually coming about. We see more and more that this information is going to be free, and we have young, brilliant internet pioneers like the people from Google who are buying up software companies that are producing new types of programs like Writely rather than Microsoft Word, or Mozilla Firefox instead of Internet Explorer, and they're providing all of these totally free to everyone. So you see, these are very, very important shifts. And now we have a new protocol that's coming about for the Internet called Internet 2, and it will come about. And there will be other iterations of it after that where, you know, it will make it very, very easy in Internet 2 to do things that we can't do on the internet. So you know how if you try to watch a video or something like that on the internet, it can be a little dodgy. You have to have exactly the right situation, and then you might get to the good part, and that's it. There's nothing going on anymore. But you know, with the next iteration, we will be able to have real-time video. So where is this leading? Are you saying, isn't this satsang? What's she talking about? Well, I'm leading to something here. And what I'm leading to is the holy river of the internet and the sages and seekers gathered there. Because you see, this is a very important revolution, because the way that we're gathered in this room, this will occur on the new internet platform, but it'll be 24/7. So there'll be satsang 24/7. where people can go on the internet and ask questions and do all of that, just like we're doing here. So you see, this is what the Great Freedom Teaching is about. We have revolutionized the use of sophisticated technology systems to carry these profound direct teachings to everyone in the world in a language that everyone can understand. So if anyone wants to join up and help us with that, we'd love your help, because we're having a great time. And you know, one of the things that we've noticed is that this love, wisdom, and energy that I'm talking about, that we gain more and more familiarity with by resting as awareness and not attaching to appearances, not holding to belief systems, going beyond causality, going beyond time and space, really realizing what it is that we're made of. This is something that is very easy to accomplish. The accomplishment of it is very swift if the correct instructions are given. But without the correct instructions, this that is so simple can end up seeming like it is very, very difficult. Have you ever noticed that? Now, one of the other things that is very important to realize is that no one, including you, has ever been flawed. And if you feel flawed, and if you feel that you have faults you want to get rid of or exhaust, the only way to do that is to rest in your flawlessness repeatedly, many times, until it becomes automatic. And in that, all faults are exhausted and all qualities are perfected. So everything we learn about all this doing to perfect qualities is needless. It's one way of going about things, but there are many people today who are done trying all those ways, you know, who are really ready to just go the direct route, go the totally direct route. Why go any other way? So what is another way we could talk about these direct instructions or epitome teachings like those of the Great Freedom Teaching? Well, what they really are is the technology. That's what they are. That's another term that we could use. So we don't have to view any of this as mysterious or esoteric or kind of weird or outside the purview of everything we're doing in ordinary life. Whatever we're doing in ordinary life, that's the perfect ground to realize who we are. We don't need to do anything else. Yesterday in the afternoon retreat, we were talking about making decisions about changing circumstances, whether to stay in the same living circumstance or change it, or stay in the same job or change it. And people wanting to know, well, how can we make those decisions? Well, how to make those decisions is so easy. We just say to ourselves, you know, where will I be of the greatest benefit? Where will I be of the greatest benefit to the most people? It's so easy. It's really very easy. And when we rest repeatedly for short moments, many times, we get so familiar with that self-benefit that really allows us to be of profound benefit to others. It's in that self-benefit that the love, wisdom, and the tremendous energy arise to go completely beyond anything we ever thought we could do or contribute. So no matter how accomplished we may be now, when we rest as awareness and get in touch with the self-benefit that is natural to us, what comes about is a whole new way of seeing everything, including our own capacities to be of benefit. This is very important. It's urgently important for each of us as individuals and for all of us together all over the world. Love is not scary. It is not scary at all, and love needs no other means. It needs absolutely no other means. Love is the sublime, skillful means. A lot of times when we feel flawed and we feel like we need to change in order to not be flawed, then when we hear about our true nature, we think, oh, I'm so flawed, so I've got to get my true nature so I won't be flawed. And so then we go somewhere and we find an institution or a group or a teaching where they'll say, yeah, you are flawed and you do need to find your true nature. But that isn't the case. I mean, you can do that if you want to, but I can tell you absolutely for certain it isn't necessary. There's no one to fix. There's no one to fix. There never has been anyone to fix. This is the true meaning of non-duality. When we rest in the equanimity that is at the basis of everything, then we realize that flawlessness about ourselves and others. That's what it means for there to be no separation. But we continue to live in a very ordinary way, you know, being of benefit to ourselves and others. We don't need to change anything. Completely within the reach and range of everyone. It doesn't require being smart, or if you aren't smart at all, you can still rest as awareness. It doesn't require being educated or not. If you're educated or not, you can still rest as awareness. It doesn't require going to any special location and cutting yourself off from everything. You can if you want to, but really all you have to do is rest as awareness. So this is a way for us to come together as a human community. And there are many, many people today, I find, all over the world who are very ready for this. Very, very ready for this, who just know that, like all of you, you hear it and you know, you say to yourself, well, of course. Or maybe you're a little tentative, or maybe you're saying, no, this isn't for me. But whatever it is, it's fine. Those who are ready, and that's all that means. It's not a special class of people. It just means that some are ready and more will join. You see, this is the meaning of love. Love is like a magnet, a very powerful magnet. There's no need whatsoever to demean yourself or find other people who will demean you. Do you know what that word demean means? Who will say you're flawed and you need to be fixed? That is absolutely not necessary. If you stay on that course, then it'll take you very far from who you are. Forever stainless knowing has never been anything that could be demeaned. Who would there be to demean that? Where would they be? And who would there be to demean? There's no way to approach what I'm saying through thinking about it or through philosophy. There's absolutely no mental avenue. We can understand a little bit through words, but when it comes right down to it, what we are is completely beyond words and concepts. Completely beyond words and concepts. So there's no mental avenue or avenue of doing anything that will lead to it. The only avenue of swift accomplishment is to rest imperturbably for short moments, repeated many times, until it becomes automatic. And you don't have to go anywhere special to do that. In the Great Freedom Teaching, we have 24/7 support worldwide, and that just becomes more and more robust all the time. Gone are the days where if you needed support for resting is awareness. There was no one to talk to. No one spoke awareness where you lived, especially in the West. Or you had to go to some special isolated location and leave everything behind. Those days are completely gone, and they will continue to radically change. You can still do that if you want to. I'm not saying not to do that. I'm just saying there is another way. Does anyone have a question they'd like to ask, or would anyone like to come up here and expound? Rest means just to relax your body and mind completely, no matter what situation you're in. So rest, unrest is to when a perception appears, in other words, a thought, emotion, or experience, whatever it is, when it appears, there's holding to it and seeking something in it or describing it as being something. That's unrest. So rest is just to relax mind completely, relax body completely in all situations, no matter what. Even if you're running a marathon, you can still relax your body completely. In fact, you'll run a much better marathon. And with no need to grab on to the appearances, whatever they are. No need to describe them or give them any special meaning or significance. It's very, very easy. In just recognizing one moment of rest, just an instant, then it is known what to repeat. So one of the purposes of the Great Freedom Teaching is to introduce people to awareness in the beginning, so it isn't something that's arrived at later on. It's introduced in the beginning, and then through that repeated rest, it becomes automatic. Do you have another question about that? Once one instant of awareness is recognized, that instant is self-kept. So the problem is just in not acknowledging the awareness that is the basis of all perceptions, all points of view, all phenomena. That's what unrest is. And once one instant of it is acknowledged or recognized, it's self-kept. It doesn't go anywhere. There's never any falling back from it because there's been the recognition of that one instant. So by short moments repeated many times, the moments become longer and longer until it fills half a day, a week, a month, a year, years, forever. First, there develops confidence that this is something that's fruitful. So there's an indwelling confidence that develops. And from that comes the certainty of complete mental freedom. Complete mental freedom in the direct encounter with all appearances, no matter what they are. Absolute complete mental freedom. And from that comes wisdom, power of potent benefit. They're all inseparable, so it's not like going from here to Hardwar and then Delhi. They're all already here. It's just that in the acknowledgement of the awareness that is at the basis, wisdom becomes more and more obvious. And what is that? It is a power, an innate power of body, speech, mind, qualities, and activities that has complete mastery over all phenomena and is not bound in any way by conventions of any kind. If it has complete mastery over all phenomena, it couldn't possibly be stuck anywhere, like history or an historical figure or any way that things have been done or will be done. The greatest of all powers is naturally present everywhere and is everything. Something more? Is there anyone here who would like to share about how that's unfolded for them? Yes?
How you got this wisdom? This awareness? From where?
From where? Nowhere. Nowhere and everywhere. You see, it's not in a location. And there's no one going to a location. Forever stainless awareness has never been located anywhere. It isn't like we have to travel to Mumbai to get it. We're in Rishikesh, right? Broadly speaking. Lakshman Jula, actually. But say you said to someone, you're here, and you said to somebody you met on the street, you said, hey, can you tell me where Lakshman Jula is? Well, you're already here. So you say to someone, can you tell me where Lakshman Jula is? And they say, sure, you travel 26,000 miles that way, and you'll end up in Lakshman Jula. And so you don't want to do that. So you meet somebody else and they say, well, you know, if you go sit on that rock for 4 years and twist your body into certain postures, then you might be in Lakshman Jula. And you decide you don't want to do that either. So then you keep walking and you say, hey, can you tell me how to get to Lakshman Jula to someone else? And they say, hey, buddy, you're in Lakshman Jula. You're already here. See, that's the person you want to hook up with. That's the person you want to meet. And even if you still are uncertain, you want that person to be someone who will say, oh, okay, you don't believe me? Okay, well, I'll show you a few things. We'll go over here and ask the store owner where you are. So you go to a store, and he says, oh, tell my friend where he is. And the store owner says, oh, you're in Lakshman Jula. So you see, there's constant reassurance and direct instruction. So you end up absolutely knowing you are in Lakshman Jula. Conviction dawns. Because at first you didn't have any idea where you were. You thought you needed to go somewhere. Conviction dawns. Because we already are who we are, it requires very little. If we allow it to require very little. Would anyone like to come up here and respond to Stefan's question about how to rest and how that's unfolded for you, or Scott? You know, I want to say one thing first. When I'm here, but wherever I am in the world, I have the absolute pleasure of spending my days with the loveliest people you would ever want to meet. Everyone is so filled with love and so much wisdom. And many of these people I work very closely with, and this is a man I've worked closely with throughout the last year, on a project to bring the teaching to young people, to teenagers. And so, you know, just to see how profoundly love is possible in all relationships and how much fun life can be is so beautiful. Scott.
I want to speak to the experience of many of us in the room who I think probably have been on the spiritual path for a longer time or a lesser time. But you hear in all the spiritual teachings, for instance, that there is no body and no mind ultimately. There's no such thing as time and space, and there's no such thing as causation. I think Vedanta has repeated this many, many times. And through the investigations of the mind, you come to some sort of intellectual construct as to what that must mean. There is no time, there is no space, I am not this body and mind, there is no causation. So you set up this scheme whereby that somehow makes sense. So for the longest time, I feel like I've just sort of woven this web of constructs that somehow fit those things into places where they make sense. I'd never known what resting as awareness could be or what that practice might involve until I came here. A year ago, I'd never heard of any of this teaching. And a friend of mine came and told me about this, and I came last February. And, Stephen, in answer to your question, it's like, first of all, it was a not wanting to construct anything else, like to make things any other way or describe them or make them any other way that they already are, and just sort of to let things be would be another way of describing it. It's like right now, I don't want to impress you or be anything big. I just want to sit here and say what I'm going to say. There's no reason to be nervous about it, and there's no reason to leave an impression or have you think this is something special. So that'd be an example of letting it be, resting in awareness. Does that make sense? Like I said, most people are very afraid of sitting up in front of other people. You know, there's a self-identity, right? And like I've got to prove something. One has to prove something. So, in any case, this is now coming to the broader question of time and space and causation. We are doing a pure space retreat in the afternoons, and we're essentially doing nothing other than reaffirming these basic truths. There is nothing but awareness, and all perceptions are nothing but an expression of that, a dynamic energy of that awareness. And so you would think that would become boring at some point. You're essentially saying the same thing. Rishikesh is this way, Rishikesh is this way, Rishikesh is this way. Thank you, I got that. Somehow it's not that way. Because somehow we really don't know where Rishikesh is. And if you're just letting it be, resting, without even seeking Rishikesh, Rishikesh just appears. Now, I don't know if that makes sense, but it's like a place that's somewhere in your mind that you've projected out into space, you find is very much not out there somewhere. So now I'm coming to the point. So the as part of our retreat is we write letters after we finish that day's retreat. And I had a little sort of mental understanding of what causation might mean. So, for instance, I thought about going to a restaurant. Francis and Alan and I go to a particular restaurant each day. So we order food that we pay for with the money that we have. And the food comes from the cook. The food came from the vegetable wala, which came from the farmer, which came from the seed, which came from a plant and a million other plants before it, and then from microorganisms that were on the earth. And those came from the earth. And those came from the sun, and those came from amorphous gases in the universe, which came from the Big Bang, which came from nothing. So the vegetables that I was eating, if you look at it, even with the mind, you look at it, it came from nothing. And all of what's gone into this that ate it, if you take it progressively forward, it goes into nothing. You just have to look at it. Just use common sense. Where did all this come from? Nothing. And where does it go through? To nothing. So I had this intellectual understanding day before yesterday. And then yesterday in the retreat, Candace said a phrase that she said many, many times. She said, "There is no time and there is no space." I said, "What? What did you say?" But I can say that it was. I mean, how many times have you heard that? Like 1 billion times. There is no time as there is no space. But somehow or another, at some point, you just go, "Oh," because it's gone in a different way. So I'm now speaking to this. The real punchline of this whole thing is, then we had this wonderful interchange where I felt like Candace was able to allow me to experience what that would be to have no time and no space. And then without understanding anything about it, only the enormous nature of it, I was just sort of sitting there. And for about 2 minutes, I tried to apply the intellect. What does this mean? And this is the good news. I couldn't do it. it's like Heisenberg found out, when you go down deep enough, there's uncertainty. This is the nature of the physical universe. Heisenberg and all the physicists agree. Ultimately, the nature of the universe is uncertainty. And so I had... No, I can't even say that a person. It was like there was no realization, and it was like it was occurring to someone else, this whatever it was. But it was clear to me that there's no way to figure this out. That became very clear to me. And once those 2 minutes were over, for the rest of the day, it was just, the only choice I had was just to let it be, just to rest. Because I wasn't going to figure this out. So in some ways, you feel like something has shifted.
But nothing happened.
And this is the ultimate kind of mantra about the whole thing. This, even this lineage back to the Big Bang. If we find out, if it becomes clear to us through this revelation that time and space actually never did exist, then nothing ever happened. Even though our senses tell us that there was a progression from 10 o'clock and now it's 11:10 and I'm going to lunch. All this is just because we affirm it in our own minds. But it need not be so. And that's what I was gifted with yesterday. So thank you very much.
In the pure space of awareness, there aren't any extremes. So there's never a need to call anything that appears something. Do you see what I'm saying? So we don't need to get into any kind of a state that we stay in, like bliss, no self, no thought, nothingness. non-conceptual state, happiness. We don't need to get into any kind of state. All appearances, no matter what they are already the nature of love, wisdom, and energy, primordial purity, no matter what they are. So nothing needs to change. We don't have to force ourselves into a certain mode of being. The naturalness at the basis of everything is present as everything, no matter what it is. So we don't need to say that either things exist or that they don't exist. There's no need to take up any extremes whatsoever. The complete freedom of everything as it is guarantees that the easeful nature of our own being is the case no matter what is appearing. And like Scott said, to just let everything be as it is to be completely free. When we let everything be as it is without trying to manipulate it or change it, accept it, reject it, then we open up to the wisdom that is beyond acceptance and rejection. Then we open up to the wisdom that is beyond thinking about everything in order to come up with a decision. Wisdom doesn't require any thinking. Wisdom is completely easeful, and all actions are effortless. Any other questions?
I mean, I sit down for a moment.
Sure.
I mean, I was really trying my whole life to understand things, and I don't think that I'm stupid, and I was really going in all kind of philosophy and masters and Buddhism and all kind of stuff, and even this like non-dual teaching I'm kind of familiar with since some years, but it was just mentally. It was just, yes, I think I'm not this body, there must be something else, and so there was belief about that. But the main thing I want to point to also to answer maybe to Stefan, that I was trying to change my whole life, always. It was never good enough. There was always something wrong with my thoughts, with my feelings, with my desires. And in a way, this is still all there. It's not gone. But at the same time, something is just relaxing more. And let's say not being so serious about it. The beliefs are still there, but it's like, you know, sometimes I even make this little game. Okay, try how long you can hold on to this. And it's not long possible. I mean, what sometimes when I have some kind of crazy thought and I think, okay, let's try to hold on this, and then 1 minute later I already have some other thoughts. Like, oh, you see, you forgot it. So try again to hold on to it. And 1 minute later, I'm just something completely else. And so, and I see that I'm still kind of used to have some belief in kind of old stories about myself, like I missed something, and anyway, it's too late, and blah blah blah. But I see more and more that something is not caring anymore so much about blah, 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 which just comes in my mind, which I really can't control. And, okay.
Thank you. Whatever our gifts are in life, we have an opportunity to display them in a magnificent way. And the more familiar we become with awareness, no matter how accomplished we've been, the more beneficial activity will come about for us. It's just guaranteed. And it's beneficial activity in terms of our own life, our own individual life, beneficial activity in terms of the people close to us that we love so much. Everything becomes easier. Beneficial activity in terms of our work and other responsibilities in life. Beneficial activity for everyone on earth and the earth herself. This is how profound we are. And so this is how our life is a precious opportunity. A precious opportunity. Thank you for coming today.